Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, October 12th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown, as always. Alex, how are things going?
Very good, thank you, Graham.
So I don't know about in Cornwall, England, but it's been raining like for 2 weeks straight here on the continent in Paris and around the Paris area. So it's kind of a bummer. I'm waiting for some sunshine.
Yeah, rain. We have the wind here too.
All right. So in any event, despite that, we're huddled inside staying warm, recording this episode. There's been a ton going on. So I didn't really have any need to go outside because I could just watch clearadmit.com and see all the craziness. But do you want to give us an update about what candidates can expect this week and also just a rundown on like what went on over the last week, because it was a pretty crazy week?
Yeah. I mean, this week upcoming, McCombs and Keenan Flagler, Stern, and actually, how should I say, Paris, they all have application deadlines. And the consortium, it's the first deadline for the consortium applicants.
Okay.
This week. And Oxford side actually is releasing its decisions, final decisions for stage one, and INSEAD will be releasing some interview invites. This last week, we saw a lot of activity. Harvard was the big player last week in terms of releasing interview invites. Those that got invited for an interview, those that didn't get invited for an interview, and those that have been essentially pushed to round two and will be considered again for that decision during the round two phases. Ross also released interview invites, and Darden released decisions for its early action round, I think. Mm-hmm. So we've a lot of activity. Things have definitely picked up in the last week or so.
Yeah, and people on the HBS interview invitation day, there was a lot of people referring to it as a bloodbath because the entries on Livewire when you're rejected are red. So people were talking about that. But I did look at the numbers a little bit, and we saw about 20% of reported entries indicating an interview invitation. 7% indicated that kind of hold status, so pushed around two or whatever you want to call it. And then the rest were rejections. But remember, everybody, HBS takes a pretty steep cut to determine interviews. So they then accept a high percentage of people who do interview. It's often actually even north of half, which you don't see at other schools. So other schools may offer like 30 or 40% or even more interviews, but then they make a steeper cut after the interview. So all hope is not lost if you're one of these round one candidates who didn't get good news out of HBS. Just stay tuned and, you know, begin to think about, backup plans, obviously, but it's not over just because HBS doesn't invite you. As I've said for the last couple of weeks, there are a ton of really good resources on clearadmit.com, especially the interview archive, where you can mine, hundreds of interview reports from candidates who've come before you and have done these interviews at schools and shared the questions which they were asked. So please do that. The other thing, Alex, I'm kind of excited. We kicked off our Real Humans series for this year. For those of you tuning in who don't know what that is, it's basically a chance for us to profile current students in business school. So we profiled, I guess we released Real Humans of Harvard Business School last week in conjunction with the interview deadline. And so Real Humans is great. We just sit down with, it depends on the school, but anywhere from 4 to 6 current students, first-year students, and ask them, about like what it's like so far and what's their background? How did they end up in business school? People love those stories. And we also just released Duke last week as well. So we're getting those out. There'll be a whole bunch of them forthcoming. So yeah, I always enjoy looking at those and sharing them around on LinkedIn and elsewhere. But that's kind of the main update. The last thing I wanted to say, Alex, is that we're still super excited about the Livewire data dashboard that we released that allows you to conduct incredibly granular searches around GPA, GMAT, GRE score, and different outcomes in the business school admissions process. Candidates have really enjoyed playing with that. So it's $20 for a month of access to this dashboard, or it's $50 for a year. I just want to encourage all of our listeners to check it out. It's a lot of fun, and it can give you a lot of insight into, where you should be applying, where you might be competitive, etc. So please tell your friends, take a look at it. And I think that's all I had this week, Alex, and we can dive into the wiretaps portion unless you had anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just ask a quick question, Graham. Given the number of entries we had on the Harvard interview invites, not invited or waitlisted situation. Can candidates analyze that data on the dashboard?
Yes. In fact, it's updated daily. So yeah, the dashboard does take all the new data on board. That's absolutely the case. So if you're a round two Harvard candidate and you're curious, like, what does it look like this year in terms of the interview invite threshold, what's happening, you can, you know, you have access to all that new data.
Yeah.
So yeah, we built the system so that it would pull all the latest data in and be updated regularly.
Very good. Very good. I need to go check that out.
All right. So, one last thing. It's now been, I officially counted, which maybe I'm obsessing about this, but it's been like a month since someone wrote a review of the podcast. We've gotten ratings and we always get these like 5-star ratings and such. But if you can take a moment to write a few things about the podcast, you can do so over at Apple, the iTunes platform where you can do that. But we always like hearing your reviews, so please share if you can. Other than that, Alex, you picked some really interesting candidates this week, and they're not all superstar, you know, 780 GMAT types. We've been trying to respond to our audience's, requests that we look at some candidates that have more regular numbers, you know, so we're doing that. And there's just some really interesting stuff this week. So if you're ready, I want to dive in here.
Yeah, let's get on.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this person wants to start business school in the fall of 2022. So they're like a year away from application. And they're looking at Berkeley, Columbia, Duke, Harvard, NYU, UCLA, Wharton, and Yale. They have been working in, consulting strategy and operations, but for a... first they did consulting, and now they're doing strategy and operations at a tech startup. And what they want to do is get into tech and maybe even launch their own business. So they indicate entrepreneurship as a post-MBA career goal. They're thinking about maybe working at a company like Apple, Google, or other tech companies post-MBA as a first step. GPA 3.49. This person has 5 years of work experience. They're in San Francisco, and they'd love to end up on either the East or the West Coast. And in the notes, which they shared a lot of really good information, they attended a top 10 U.S. public university, majored in econ. The tech startup that they're working at is currently in pre-IPO talks. And they're thinking that if there is an IPO, it'll happen right around the time this person's going to be, you know, heading off to business school. They haven't taken the GMAT, but they're estimating or targeting around 720. And they have a handful of extracurriculars. I'll let you kind of speak to them. I also thought maybe you could share that they had something to say about the podcast. So I don't know if you wanted to share that as well. But what do you make of this candidate and their thoughts on our podcast and everything else?
Well, obviously they're a brilliant candidate because they love the podcast and they take bike rides in San Francisco listening to us pontificate over candidates' likely chances and so on and so forth. So that's absolutely brilliant. I think there's some interesting aspects to this candidacy, Graham, as we talked about a little bit prior to coming on air. This candidate, like the next one we're going to talk about, is thinking ahead, which we like. They're looking at the application season of next season. So it's kind of like, well, what can I do now to further strengthen my candidacy over the next year so that I really maximise my sort of positioning, as it were, in the process. One answer to that is to make sure, obviously, that they get their best test score. And that sounds a little trite, but the idea there is, you know, prep really hard, take the test, and you have time to retake the test if you don't, in this case, if you don't hit the 720, which is what this person is targeting. And I think with a 720 GMAT, 3.49 GPA is just slightly lower than average for the very top programs, but still that puts them well in the ballpark to take one of your one of your baseball analogies or whatever you like to call it. I reckon this person's probably got really pretty interesting work experience working in tech with a company I imagine is quite high growth. It's pre-IPO. These are sorts of, you know, this sort of stuff will resonate with Adcom, I should imagine. They need to show impact in their role. So hopefully they're able to do that and have that backed up by their recommenders. That would be very good. I like their extracurriculars. On the one hand, they're doing some mentoring, and they started a mentoring program. I'd quite like to know a little bit more about that. So there's a difference between sort of mentoring and participating in a mentoring program versus actually establishing a mentoring program, i.e. identifying a need, filling that need with your program. So if that's truly an interesting mentoring program, that could play really well in admissions. And in terms of, again, what can this candidate be doing over the next year to really push their profile is potentially ratcheting up the mentoring program, if it clearly is filling a need. The other thing I like to see about those types of programs is make sure it's sustainable even at the time that, let's say, you move on from that program. Does it fold when you move on, or have you established something that leaves a proper legacy, i.e. it thrives and continues under other guidance and leadership? I think that's a much better outcome. And obviously volunteering at a food bank and stuff like that's also very good. But I do like the idea of the mentoring program, Graham. Finally, and I'll turn it back to you, their goals are sort of, you know, entrepreneurial inclined. They like the tech social space. I'm like, well, who doesn't? I mean, that's your Facebook and your Twitter and TikTok. I mean, who doesn't want to be the next Mark Zuckerberg and never have to sleep again or whatever it is? But what I would say is, if they have, like, as a candidate like this, if you do have a business idea, if you want to be passionate about these types of goals, you don't just want to be a dime a dozen. Yeah, I want to go off and start a business in tech. I'll figure it out. It's like, really, you know, make sure it's something that you can really back up when you're asked in an interview a little bit more about these ideas and that sort of thing. I think that's quite important, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. I think the interesting thing about this candidate is that it's sort of, it could be, you know, and this is no offense intended, but it could be kind of ho-hum, right? You might say, well, the numbers are sort of, you know, maybe 720, 349, if that's where this person lands on the GMAT, are kind of, you know, run-of-the-mill. As you said, they put them in the ballpark for sure. And I'm happy to include some cricket analogies if there are any out there that you want to use. But
I like cricket just as much as I like baseball, so Graham. We're going to have to pick a different sport than that.
but what I would say is that I think, this is like one of those candidacies where it's sort of like, okay, working at a tech startup. And so it's all going to come down to the stories that this person is able to tell and that the recommenders are able to tell. So I think there's a lot of upside. Like, I feel like, you know, as you said, they started a mentoring program. They have what's needed. It's going to take a strong application because it's not as though they're applying from, you know, Botswana and have set up a company or something. Like, there's, you know, they're going to be more in an overrepresented portion of the applicant pool. And so with sort of average numbers, you need to then find other ways to stand out. I will say, I was happy to hear that they listened to the podcast while riding their bike and while cooking dinner, because as we know, those of you who listened last week, I attempted to run to the podcast because we'd heard so many people saying they're running while listening to this, and I failed miserably at that test. So now I have two other things I could potentially try out in the future, but we will see. I'll report back on what it's like. I'd be afraid to get hit by a car if I'm listening to a podcast while riding a bike, but we'll see how it goes. Hopefully I'll be here next week to report on that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, I like this candidate. I did wonder, like, they have 5 years of experience already, it seems like, and so they're going to start to get into that lots of experience domain, and so that's where having, you know, a lot to report in terms of accomplishments at work is going to be useful. So I would just keep an eye on that. And as you said, to the extent that they can knock the GMAT out of the park, that would be great as well. So unless you have anything else on this one, I suggest we start looking at our next candidate.
I'm already looking at the next candidate, Graham.
I knew you were. All right. Okay. So the next candidate, this is Wiretap's candidate number 2. And this person wants to start in the fall of 2022. So this is another person, like what we could call an early bird. They have 6 schools on their target list, and those schools are Cornell, Duke, Emory, UNC, Wharton, and Darden. And they've been working as an operations analyst in the financial services sector, and they want to move into investment banking. And the companies they have on their list are the usual suspects: Bank of America, Barclays, Goldman, JP Morgan, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and they added some additional ones. But anyway, it's a long list of banks. Their GPA is a 3.28, and they have 1.5 years of work experience at the moment. Obviously, they'll have more than that by the time they matriculate. This person's in New York and would love to land in New York after business school as well. They said, hi, Graham and Alex, hope you're doing well during these times. I love listening to your podcast and would love to be featured. So here you are on the podcast. The other thing I did want to mention before you offer up a little bit of a critique is that this person does indicate that they are an avid bodybuilder and that they compete in competitions. So we better go easy here just in case we're worried about that coming back to bite us if they don't like what we have to say. But anyway, what do you make of this candidate? Because I think it's another one where not an obvious home run, but you know, they have a wide range of schools. So yeah, I'm just curious where you land on this.
Yeah, interesting candidate. This is sort of candidate, again, not coming from what you would call a feeder establishment in terms of targeting top tier business schools, right? So not to talk down to the candidate at all, and apologies if it comes across as that, but they went to one of the SUNY schools, which are, you know, they're very good schools, but they're not traditional feeders into sort of iBanking and various other top tier situations. So my point of bringing that up is, you know, it makes it a little bit tougher to get that first sort of you know, job coming out of university, getting on that track and so on and so forth. And I imagine actually this person's done quite well within those circumstances in terms of where they've gotten to. They're now an operations analyst and so on and so forth. So it would be important for them to really show their impact at work. Like you said, they've got a whole nother year before they got to apply. So the first thing I would do if I was this candidate is I'd go to my boss and really seek out some challenging opportunities over the next year and see what they can provide to really sort of push themselves and get them out of the comfort zone a little bit. I think that'll be very important. The other thing that I like about this candidate is that because I guess that they came from, in essence, a non-feeder type university, that they're trying to give back a little bit more in terms of those sorts of candidates, offering opportunities and so on and so forth. They're also quite heavily involved in other community-based activities, so they see that that's very important, whilst, as you say, they also do some bodybuilding competitions and so forth. So they're quite an active character outside of the classroom, outside of work. So I would say, and I put this directly into the comments on the site, they've got basically three things that they can focus on over the next year to strengthen their candidacy. And this was their basic question on ApplyWire. And it's the three things they can strengthen. One is your work profile, so go seek out opportunities. Don't wait for them to come. Ask your boss. Get on some challenging assignments. If you're in an organization that will allow you to do that, seek those opportunities outside of work. So maybe rather than spread yourself thin over four or five different extracurricular activities, make sure over the next year, one of them is super meaningful, both to yourself as a candidate, but also its impact on whomever it is that you're affecting. And then the third is, frankly, ace the GMAT. You know, again, target that 700 plus score and target it, you know, prep really well, take the test, recognizing that you might have to retake the test, which is exactly the same advice as we gave the last person. This person is a lot younger or you know, less years of work experience than our previous person we profiled. So, you know, they're still, even when they apply next season, they're going to face the challenge of, is now the right time to get the MBA? And the AgCom might be, again, still thinking, well, another year or two, you're going to be a stronger candidate, so we're going to push you back a little bit. So just bear that in mind also. So those are some of my thoughts, Graham.
Yeah, those are good points. And I'm sure that you picked these first two wiretaps candidates out because both are early birds, but they're really different early birds because one is a kind of early career and the other is actually fairly far along. So it's an interesting contrast.
Yeah.
I agree that there's a lot that could happen with this candidate. And I will say they have a 3.28, but they did mention in the notes that, you know, they had like a 3.6 in their last year. or maybe even in their last 2 years. So they have this upward trajectory, which we like to see. And I think I really like the notion that, you know, they went to an institution, you know, one of the SUNYs, where it wasn't like an obvious feeder path, like you said, to the big banks in New York or something. So they, you know, they haven't ended up in investment banking straight away, but they've worked their way up and are doing, you know, interesting work, it sounds like to me, as an operations analyst. And so I think the good news is that their goal of getting into banking post-MBA isn't hard to swallow. Like, it's pretty straightforward. So I there's a lot to like. I do think that the GMAT will be important because it will ultimately lend some color to the low GPA. And so that'll be important. I will also say that unlike the last candidate, this person has a slightly wider range of institutions on their list. So, you know, they, depending on where they land with the test, it's still, I think some of these schools, you know, they have Emory, UNC, those are on the list. And those schools are, they're not as crazy with the numbers as you might see it like Wharton, which is on their list as well, right? So they have a good range. And I think that's smart. That's going to help them to find success. I did want to ask you before we move on, I wanted to ask you, what do you make of the school selection in the sense that we know they want to do banking, we know they want to end up in New York, but then there's this, you know, if you look at like Duke, Emory, UNC, and even Darden, those are all kind of in the, you know, sort of Southeast, you could argue. Yeah. And then you've got Penn and Philly and Cornell and Ithaca. So for me, what was interesting is the conspicuous absence of the programs that are in these kind of banking hubs. So like, I don't see Columbia or Stern on the list. I don't see, you know, Chicago Booth is a school well-known for finance. Even, you know, MIT is pretty well-known for finance. So I wonder what you made of that, if they just wanted more of a rural experience, kind of a close-knit experience for the MBA, or any idea what's driving that?
Yeah, I mean, that might well be the case, Graham. I mean, obviously, they've studied in the SUNY system, so they must have some perspective in terms of if they wanted to get, you know, target a program like Columbia or Stern. They would be obvious choices being in New York City. But they must have made a deliberate decision not to, because it would be odd for them not to appear. And like you say, Chicago is an obvious choice too. One thing about the spread of these schools, again, it's very good. You've got sort of M7, top 16, and then top what I would call top 21 or whatever the next band is, all represented. But there is a bit of a gap between Wharton and the sort of top 16. So there might be worth looking at one or two more of these M7 type programs that are considered, you know, not universally, but are considered by many to be maybe a notch below Wharton, but ahead of the top 16. I think, I mean, obviously, you know, a real great opportunity here would be a school like Johnson, I think. They have a great, obviously, reputation in investment banking, and they're a great feeder into New York City.
Yeah, I agree. And this person's likely familiar with Ithaca. If they went to one of the SUNY schools, they probably were upstate somewhere in New York, so they must know.
Yeah.
The other school that I would maybe ask them to consider adding to their list, based on what I'm gathering is their, you know, their taste for a school, would be Tuck. Tuck's a school that's got a really strong core curriculum, yeah, obviously very good in finance, and does place a bunch of people in New York and Boston, but New York too. And it kind of fits the same, you know, sort of vibe that you might have at a Darden or a Duke or a Cornell, with which is, you know, a kind of less urban setting and close-knit, et cetera. So something to consider.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, a lot, the beauty of this is that this candidate has time, right? As with the first candidate, they have time before they're going to apply to shape what they're going to come into the process with. So I would encourage them to work hard on the GMAT, take opportunities at work, as you said, and yeah, just get ready to put their best foot forward. But again, I like the way they're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, the key to all that is be proactive. You're thinking a year in advance of applications. Be proactive. Don't wait for opportunities to land on your feet, land on your plate or whatever. Seek them out. Go to your boss. Seek them out in your community. Really, you know, be proactive. I think that's great advice for any candidate that's thinking, you know, 1 or 2 years out.
Yeah, agreed. So let's move on. I'm happy to say that our final Wiretaps candidate for this episode is applying now for next year, in case those of you listening are kind of like, wait, why aren't we getting any current applicants? So let's talk about Wiretaps candidate number 3. So this person has 10 schools on their target list. I'm presuming they're going to whittle that down, but for now they've got Berkeley, Columbia, Dartmouth, Duke, Harvard, Michigan, Kellogg, NYU, Stanford, and Yale. And they want to start next fall. And they've been working as a public school music teacher. So this is a really non-traditional profile. They want to get into consulting and maybe nonprofit or social impact type work. And they mention companies as targets, which include Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Deloitte, McKinsey, and PwC. They've taken the GRE and scored 325, and their GPA is a 3.93. They've got 4 years of work experience, and they are located in Washington, D.C. This candidate is a woman, and she mentions that she is LGBTQ and mixed race, and has also indicated that she was promoted once in her position, and is also a Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitor. So I guess we better be careful here too, Alex, in case these people come after us after we give them feedback. And she indicates strong extracurriculars, so obviously of which Brazilian jiu-jitsu is one. But what do you make of this candidate? Because it's not every day that you see a music teacher wanting to go off and get an MBA.
Yeah, no, this super interesting candidate. The 3.93 GPA, I think, is fantastic too, right? I don't care what discipline you do at university. If you do it for 4 years and you get a GPA of that caliber, then you've dedicated, you've done very well.
Sure.
So props for that. I think this candidate is really, really interesting, but could fall victim to being a little too interesting. And what I mean by that, Graham, is oftentimes with candidates, we're looking for what factor is it about your profile that helps distinguish you or separate you or add a little bit of diversity in terms of your profile, right? With this candidate, that's everything. It's the career, it's this, it's that. It's like everything differentiates this person. And what I think is going to be super important for a candidate like this is to really make the case of why she needs this MBA and what she plans to do. If she can nail those two aspects of her candidacy, then she's going to have a lot of great options, I think. So my point is, you know, we want diversity, and I'm mostly focusing on the career aspect here in terms of what she did for the last 4 years for her career. That's going to be very different to pretty much everybody in the classroom, which is going to be interesting. But unless she has a really good plan for why she's in business school, one, she might get lost in the shuffle of all the stuff that goes on in business school. And secondly, yeah, she's not going to make the most of that time, the resources of the business school, and so on and so forth. So as long as she really knows why, and I reckon she probably does, because who would make the decision to go from being a music teacher to getting an MBA to not have a plan of what you're going to do? You must have a plan of what you're going to do. I assume this person has a very good plan. I'd love to know what it is. And I would love to see this person in a very top school, which I think she's well capable of being at.
Yeah, I agree. So I would say this is actually a great general lesson on MBA admissions. And that is that the first two candidates we discussed today are candidates that need to work to sort of stand out, right? That's going to be their job, because their work experience and the things that they're doing are not kind of out of, you know, they're not incredibly unusual or anything, right? And so they're going to have to work to just show what makes them different and how they can sort of rise above. This candidate, she's actually going to need to work a little bit to fit in and show that she knows what an MBA is all about and what it's, you know, what it's going to entail.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is that, again, GPA, stellar, the GRE score, very solid as well. So I think, you know, she's going to be competitive at any of the schools on her list. I will say that if I'm an admissions officer looking at her profile, one of the things I'm going to look for very quickly is going to be competence in the quantitative sort of foundational coursework that's sort of required to survive that first semester in business school. So I would look to see if in undergrad she had any exposure at all to, you know, economics, statistics, calculus, anything that, you know, kind of falls in that general bucket of being sort of quantitative and sort of, you know, B-school relevant. And if not, I'm going to look very carefully at the quantitative performance on the GRE. And then I'm going to also hope that in her, you know, application or recommendations that there's something that she's doing either you know, at work or outside of work that might demonstrate some of those kind of quantitative chops. I don't know if that's like budgeting for the music department at her school or whatever it might be. But that would be one thing that I think some schools might have a concern about, although I don't view it as a reject type concern. I think it would be more in the lines of what we would call a conditional admit. And so for those listening who don't know what that is, it just means that some schools will admit you, but under the condition that you take like calculus online and get an A before you show up on campus, or, you know, or they might even just give you some online coursework that you have to complete from their own institution before you show up. So sometimes they do things like that. I've even seen it done with the GMAT, or, you know, if someone has a low score and everything else is great, they might ask you to retake it. But in any event, I love this candidate. I mean, I as a kind of a musician, as a hobbyist, as some of the listeners know, but so I'm always on the lookout for people who have kind of a non-traditional profile. And I think it's really interesting what she wants to do. What do you make of her school selection? I mean, she wants to get into consulting, and arguably any top school can facilitate that. But are you, I mean, I see 10 schools on this list. I'm a little nervous. That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that to me, again, sort of smacks to the idea of she's not completely concrete about this whole plan idea. So the school selection is pretty broad, and you know, 10 schools is a lot to handle. So you want to whittle that down to about 5 or 6 schools, I would think. That's about average these days. But you know, the types of schools she's applying to, absolutely, that those are the schools she should be applying to. Just narrow the list down a little bit. I would say there is a remedy to the concern that you have, Graham. I mean, if she doesn't have that quant background, is go make sure they sign up for HBS Core or whatever it's called, or MBA Math or something. Like, be proactive about it. Don't wait for the school to conditionally admit you.
Yeah.
Because they might choose not to, because they might have another equally qualified candidate that did do MBA math or whatever. So that's done. It's a done deal. So they're going to select that person over you. So don't fall into that bucket if you can avoid it. But that, again, it might be a non-issue for this person entirely. Again, my whole thing, I potentially think this candidate could be at any of the very top schools, including the one she's listed, Harvard, Stanford, whatever. That's absolutely fantastic. But I really would like to know a little bit more about the YMBA, the goals. It's all well and good saying, well, I want to go do consulting because, you know, what does that do? It allows me to figure stuff out, and I can do that for a couple of years, and then maybe I'll land on my feet and be lucky or something. But to get into those very top schools, it's someone that's seriously thought long and hard and knows exactly where they want to be.
Yeah, I agree. And the only other thing I would add is, it'd be nice, and I'm sure she's already thought about this and just didn't share it on ApplyWire, but it'd be nice if there was some connection between her either music interest or education interest and her future goals. So maybe she wants to get into like ed tech, or maybe she wants to, you know, do something within the music business. Like, I don't know what the long-term plan is, but it'd be good if there was some thread that could be woven. And I feel like I say this every week, but it's important, you know, to have a story to tell. And I think that would make her story all the more compelling. So in any event, great candidacy. Excellent work picking these out this week, Alex. I feel like you responded to our listeners, you know, asking us for, you know, people without maybe the best numbers on earth. And also I like that we covered a couple of early birds. So thanks for picking these out as always. If you're willing, we'll do this next week as usual.
Yeah, very good.
Excellent. All right. So we'll see everyone next week. And thanks, Alex, again, for all your time on this.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Graham. And stay safe, everybody. Take care.